Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
It is that time of the week when Owl Post is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, the incomparable Drea Kaufman.
As long as you don't call me Phlegm, we're good to go.
There is nothing worse than waking up in the morning with a bunch of phlegm. I can tell you.
I think Bill Weasley would disagree.
Well, That's an after-hours podcast, I feel like. So I'm just going to let that slide by and say that welcome to Outpost, where you can find us wherever you get your podcasts.
We're usually much more PG than that.
Yes. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, which is a great place to give us a star rating and review, help people find the show, just let them know what you think. It helps us continue to grow in the Harry Potter fandom. And you can also find us on Twitter at JoyNerdParty or on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. Both places, follow us, like us there, interact with us. We post the shows there. We love talking to listeners about what they think about Harry Potter. So do that, please, please. It's so much fun for Dre and I. You can also send us an email, which we get emails frequently and talk about them over at thenerdparty.com/contact. Just choose Owl Post, and then that email comes to Drea and I. So we are on Chapter 5 of The Half-Blood Prince, An Excess of Phlegm. And the chapter begins with Harry and Dumbledore walking into the Burrow because, they finished their conversation. I'm just like Mrs. Weasley. I'm easily startled, honestly. My wife will tell you, I am easily startled, and big time. Like, so when she's, almost scared to death by Albus walking in the door with Harry, I feel for Mrs. Weasley because I hate that feeling.
Not very easily startled, but I feel like a stranger walking in my home at a little after midnight is probably going to startle me, even though I don't really startle particularly easily.
Well, and it was interesting because, after she gets her bearings, she says to him, "We didn't expect you for hours." He says, "Well, we were lucky. It didn't take that long to persuade Slughorn." So that's pretty nice. I mean, the fact that they thought that this was going to take hours and hours and hours, and it really only took maybe 45 minutes. That's good.
Yeah. It is interesting, too, because you don't get the impression from Dumbledore in the previous chapter that that was going to be the case, right? You didn't get this impression that he was going to take a lot of time. He was going to kind of give it. You kind of got the impression he was going to give it a one-off shot. And if it didn't work, it didn't work, so it was really interesting that that was the expectation. It is interesting, too, that and I found note, and we kind of get it confirmed a little later in the chapter, but that she didn't attempt to verify either of their identities, which...
No, she did not.
We'd kind of heard a little bit about that earlier, and, we mentioned that the Burrow is kind of a more heavily guarded place right now, and they just sort of waltzed right in. So I thought that was kind of interesting that happened, too.
Yeah, there's just something about the Dumbledore air, that...
You just can't fake that as a Death Eater.
Yeah, you just breathe that in and you just know it's Dumbledore, So they also run into Nymphadora, who's here as well.
Don't call her Nymphadora.
No. Even though Dumbledore does. So, which he kind of calls everybody by their proper name, Tom Riddle is Tom, he doesn't really go into for nicknames, but Tonks is apparently not looking so good. She's looking a little peaky. Not quite as vibrant. Her hair isn't as exciting as it normally is. And, she just... this is a very interesting part of the chapter because there's also a mention later about her, with Mrs. Weasley kind of inviting her over a lot. And so we've got a mystery, I think, one of our first mysteries here with the book, which is that Tonks seems off her game.
Yeah, one of our first new mystery that we kind of didn't already have. This is definitely going to start to amp up some things in this chapter that, you know, comes to question. And there's a few other questions that get raised as well that Harry, that kind of come up with Harry when Ron and Hermione are all talking. So, it is interesting. She does seem, they mentioned she looks very pale and, you know, she leaves very quickly, even though she's invited to stay. And, you know, it's just kind of a dreary interaction, but it kind of gets when we find out about Mr. Weasley and his new job, but at the same time, there's some other sort of dreary moments, particularly the one that stands out to me for the first part of this chapter is the fact that the entire family clock is pointed at mortal peril at all times for the most part. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, rather unpleasant for for all of them. So I thought that was really interesting. And then it just changes when Mr. Weasley travels home and then he ends up back in mortal peril again. So,
yeah, I thought, you know, that on top of the fact that Dumbledore's reason for leaving right away is that he's got to go talk with Rufus Scrimgeour about some very serious matters. It does put kind of a cloud over everything. And even the things that we talk about with Mrs. Weasley, like, you know, she asks Harry what she thought of. He's thought of Slughorn. He's like, oh, he couldn't really talk. And she's, you know, agreeing with him, that face that he's making, like, yeah, he, you know, he taught us in our year, but he wasn't too big of a fan of really either of us because, you know, we weren't really good enough for him. Basically,
there wasn't anything they could do for him, right? Like, he didn't see them as valuable to him.
Yes. Yeah. So kind of reinforcing that. And then this idea, too, that one of the reasons that Mr. Weasley has this new job that which is great. He's got a new job at the ministry, but it's a job taking care of all the things that Death Eaters have like jinxed or, you know, muggle wise that they use to trick muggles to using. And even wizards as well. So he has this new job because of all these things that are going wrong. And so this kind of continues to build the idea that under the surface, the Death Eaters have been very active in the world. And so it's, there's some happy moments in the sense that, like, you know, Harry's eating good food finally and getting to be at the Burrow, but it's not necessarily happy because a lot of the things surrounding the people here, it's not necessarily great things.
It's one of those things where, like, yeah, he got a promotion, but it's not necessarily a good reason. And, you know, he's still, I don't know. It's just, it's one of those really interesting moments where you're like, I don't know about that.
Well, and too, I mean, on top of it's great that he's got the promotion and, I mean, he's kind of getting seen differently maybe at the ministry because of who's in charge now. But he's also, because of all this, he's having to work very long hours. I mean, it's past midnight, and Mr. Weasley still is not home. And I do love when he gets home, and Molly hasn't asked him the questions. He makes her ask the questions, which was hilarious, because the answers to both of theirs are very, very funny. And of course, they're in front of Harry. So,
and he doesn't know that, which I love that he doesn't know that that's what it is. But, you know, Mrs. Weasley having to say her nickname, essentially her pet name in front of Harry was kind of like, oh.
Yeah, when they're experiencing too much phlegm. It's awkward.
That was not me this time.
Yeah. We've got our own euphemism now for the show. Isn't that great? That's really funny.
Let's hope the kids don't catch on.
Yeah. But I do.
Sorry, parents.
I do think it's funny. The thing that he's been kept at the office for is people have been buying these metamorph metals that are supposed to like change you to disguise you if, you know, Death Eaters are around, and really they just end up turning people an unpleasant orange color. And then there's been this very nasty backfiring jinx that happened down at, it sounds like a bar, the Elephant and Castle, classic kind of bar. And so the magical law enforcement squad had to be there. And so they've been super busy at the ministry with all of these things happening. And Mr. Weasley, you know, again, not great that the reason he has the this promotion and everything, but Mr. Weasley apparently has found a way in with the new ministry, you know, with the new people in charge, and he's somebody that they trust. So that is a good part of what's happened. So that's great.
It's like a good thing and a bad thing. We also, I like, and I don't know if it's exactly in this part or a little later on, but they talk about the fact that somebody asks, I think Harry asks, if it could be Fred or George. Mm-hmm. You know, would they participate? And Mrs. Weasley was like, absolutely not. There's no way that they would do that. They know better. They know the atmosphere we're in. They know all of that. And I thought that was really insightful, too, and gives us just a little bit more information and insight about the family and the dynamic. And we've talked mm-hmm. a lot in previous episodes about sort of the altruism of the Weasley family. And I think this is just continuing to reiterate the fact that even though Fred and George have started to make more money and become successful businessmen, that it hasn't affected their core their core morals. Like, they still follow that compass of who they are and what they learned in their family. So I thought that was really interesting.
Well, and it's kind of neat, too, because they come up in conversation, and part of that is because Harry gets their room, because they're not staying there anymore, and they're actually living over their shop in Diagon Alley, and they're doing a fair amount of business. And Mrs. Weasley, who was not a fan of the fact that they left school and started a joke shop at, you know, in the last book, has actually come around. She's quite proud of her sons for what they've been able to accomplish. And so it's really nice to be able to see that. And so Harry goes to bed, and I love the way she puts it. As soon as his head hits the pillow, it feels like he's getting woken up in the middle of the morning with Ron and Hermione coming in and having a conversation with him, basically waking him up. I feel bad for Harry. Like, doesn't even have a moment to put on his glasses before they're already, you know, kind of like pestering with questions and stuff. And Hermione just kind of keeps staring at Harry, and Harry's like, what? She's like, no, nothing, you know. And Harry realizes that she's kind of, you know, she's worried about him. And it's a little bit sweet. So he begins to tell them about, you know, recruiting Slughorn and all that. And they're like, oh, well, of course we need a new teacher because, you know, Defense Against the Dark Arts, Umbridge isn't there. So we don't even know yet if, you know, our thought process is their thought process is that's the role that he's going to fill. So that's very interesting. And then Ginny shows up because, you know, just because everybody's in Harry's room, you know, while he's in his pajamas. And she starts talking about her, and Harry's like, who are you talking about? And it turns out that Fleur has come to stay with the Weasleys because she's engaged to Bill, and all of the women hate her.
Yeah, they really do. I'm interested because I feel like this dynamic is covering a couple things. And I know this is something that prior to our recording, Matt had mentioned that you really wanted to get to talk about this dynamic between all the women. Because it seems very juvenile. Because even Mrs. Weasley gets involved and does not like Fleur. And while she chastises Ginny for calling her phlegm, which is apparently what the women are calling her, she still doesn't like to be around her, or thinks it's moving too fast, and still is pretty judgmental and not accepting, which is surprising for someone like Mrs. Weasley, who very easily just kind of accepts anyone under her little mama wing. So this dynamic is challenging for me, and this is one I don't generally like portrayed with women, is this jealous, catty perspective with other women, because I don't think it does anybody any good. So I'll be really interested to follow this through its fruition in the books and see, because in the movie it doesn't really get paid off. We get a little bit of it in the movie, but we never really get a good resolution on what that's all about. And in the movie it's mostly Ginny who doesn't like Fleur. It's very concentrated there, and you know, Hermione doesn't either. But there's definitely, I think, more going on here, especially knowing J.K. Rowling and what she likes to use different things to speak to things. We've talked a lot about the media. We've talked about sort of the idea of racism used in these environments. And I feel a little bit like this is another instance where she's kind of less focused. I mean, she's using a normal relationship, a normal trope, if you will, with women and being catty. But I also think she's kind of speaking a little bit to this hesitation to accept someone that's different from you. Because we know that Fleur's not from the area. She sounds different. She talks different. She acts different.
I mean, she's French. Why else would she have this outrageous accent?
She's French. She's also part Vila, which also has sort of some powers. I also wonder if the Vila powers kind of don't affect women or affect women opposite, you know, like they make you more inclined to dislike her. But I think it's a combination of a lot of different things here, but she's definitely getting some flack. I also think there's a little bit of them thinking she's overly fake and doesn't get them and isn't being authentic. I think that's probably part of it too. And then I think there's a dash, because let's just keep throwing things in here, a dash of protective about their family, right? Because she's joining the family. She's joining Bill, a character we haven't had a lot of interaction with and know a lot about. He kind of is like the rogue bad boy of the family, but I think... you know, I think that, that there's a level of trying to kind of protect their own as well in there, like their family, and making sure that no one is getting in there. And I'm sure all of that is heightened given the current climate they find themselves in. So I think it's just so dynamic. There's so much going on here. I'll be interested to see how she sort of resolves a lot of this. But, you know, I don't like the hatred that we put on Fleur and this kind of tropey women hating other women for being successful or gorgeous as she's depicted, or incredibly friendly, because she doesn't say or do anything particularly offensive here. So, you know, it's just going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out. But, you know, it's one of those where I'm just like, oh, that's not very evolved, and maybe dates the book just a little bit.
What I found really interesting is that in this chapter, Fleur is much different than she was in the book we met her. She seems to have had quite a change in her personality, in the sense that she does not seem stuck up here. She seems very kind. She's obviously very excited to see Harry again, and even says to him, you know, Gabrielle, my sister, can't stop talking about the famous Harry Potter, and she's looking forward to seeing you when Bill and I get married. And I think there's a few things that I was wondering, why would the women kind of respond to her? One, you know, so unfortunately for human nature, we do not like people that are more successful and or more beautiful than we are. It's a proclivity that we have to be jerks to people that like that.
It's just hard, yeah. Right? It's hard when others are successful, and especially if you're not really secure and satisfied with what you have. It's hard. It's a skill you have to grow, not just something we have.
Right. And I mean, her being part Vila means that every room that she walks into with men, immediately they're looking at her, and it's not, she is the most beautiful woman in the room, you know, and not just in the, you know, just in this room kind of thing, like Flight of the Conchords might say, but no, she's like the most beautiful woman in any room that she walks in. And the men are immediately attracted to her, and have that, it has an impact on them. I also do wonder if there is some sort of like reverse thing to where the part of Vila that she is has an impact on the women. But I also kind of think that's the the reaction that they're having is where J.K. Rowling is again going to be able to use the idea of the preconceptions of people that we have and the prejudices that we have against people. And she, I think throughout the rest of the series, this book and the last, is going to use that in a minor way here. And so, because that's really what I pick up here, is that they're coming at Floor in the way that we've seen so many other people react to people that you kind of have a preconception and or prejudice against, whether it's you're a muggle born, or which we talked about last week with, you know, Slughorn, or, you know, any of these little things, or some of the bigger things that we've seen, whether it's, you know, the way wizards treat non-wizards, but magical creatures, you know, that are intelligent, just like centaurs and, you know, house elves and all these type of things. And so Vila seemed to be something that people can react very strongly to, especially women. And so I think that that's one of the things that I'm hoping, and if I I don't think this is spoiling anything, but I think that's kind of where the story ends up, you know, here. But yes, their reaction is very strong. And I love the way that Jenny kind of pokes at her mom a little bit, because Jenny just likes to poke at people. And how, yeah, she says, you know, mom hates her. And she's like, I don't hate her. Their engagement's just rushed, which is a classic mom thing to say. And how, you know, everybody seems to be rushing these things just because you know who is back. And she goes, mm-hmm, like you and dad. So it's very funny that, you know, Bill and Floor have much the same type of relationship that Molly and Arthur did. And they got married quickly because of what happened. And quickly in the sense that, like, Floor and Bill have known each other for a few years now, and they've worked together for a year. So it's not like they just seem to have jumped into this willy-nilly, right. Which is great, which is why Ginny's poking at her mom about it, which is funny.
Right. I do think that's funny. And I do think that... that's kind of what speaks to even Mrs. Weasley not really being accepting at this point in time. And I'm just very, you know, you're very confused. And why is that, you know, why is that the thing? And how do we go from here and all of that stuff? So, you know, I'm hoping some of the woman on woman crime, as I like to refer to it, sort of dissipates as the story goes on, and it becomes a richer reasoning behind this thought process. Because, you know, again, it's not a trope I enjoy, and it's not a trope I like seeing perpetuated. And, you know, it's a really kind of ugly side to a lot of these characters that we've grown up to know and love. I'd rather that not be the case, but, you know, that very much so. I mean, we've had other instances where Hermione specifically is not showing up as the best version of herself. But, you know, that also, we're all human and we all make mistakes, and that just makes these characters even more real and more human-like as well. So,
well, and one of the things that's interesting as well on this is that, you know, you mentioned, and we talked about the idea that Molly has been trying to invite, apparently, Tonks over more often. And Hermione and Ginny are much more about the idea of Bill getting together with Tonks than they are Floor. And I think, you know, part of the reason is for that is, you know, like you mentioned, Floor's kind of part of this group, right? She's already part of this family, and, you know, she's accepted by everybody around her, and Floor isn't, right? Like you said, she's from France. She's from a totally different part of the wizarding world. And as we saw from, you know, I think this is one of the things that the Fantastic Beasts do, the movies do so well, is they help us realize how different the wizarding world is around the world from what we knew just in Harry, you know, Britain and the United Kingdom. So there's a real difference then with the way that wizards are in different parts, even across the channel. So, you know, their love of Tonks, you know, they have a relationship with her. They already like her. So the fact that they would rather her be with Bill instead of Floor, it does kind of make sense. And there's a bit of tribalism, I think, that's happening here, which, you know, J.K. Rowling is very good at poking at. And I think that's kind of one of the things that she's poking at here. And, you know, Hermione should know better, especially since everybody made fun of her when she was all into Victor Crumb and they've been writing each other and she was talking about wizarding world, you know, coming together and all that with the greatness of the Triwizard Tournament and the reason for it being there and that we're supposed to, you know, meet wizards from other places. You know, she's forgotten a little bit of that. And I think what we see is how easy it is for us to be hypocrites. And that we all kind of need forgiveness for that. And that'll be interesting to see whether that's something that plays out.
I agree. Yeah, it'll be interesting. And this is, again, one of those instances where I think Hermione has some things to learn and we all have some lessons to learn. And, you know, Ginny and Floor and Mrs. Weasley head back downstairs after this whole thing kind of pans out. And, that's when Harry takes the opportunity to share the prophecy with Ron and Hermione. And I love that when he does this, he describes this feeling of this knot in his chest just dissipating. Like the stress of sharing this and not having to bear the secret alone and being able to actually talk to somebody just creates this immediate physical relief for him that I'm like, oh, it's one of those like, I feel you, you know, like that's so real and you can totally relate that I love just that part of it. And I do love too that Ron keeps going like, oh, I knew it was something. I love the role they each play because, you know, even Harry notes that Hermione seems a little more nervous or they both seem a little more shocked by this than they're letting on. But, you know, Harry appreciates that they're not digging into it right now. And, you know, they get to just kind of talk through it a little bit before Harry tells them what Dumbledore told them was coming this morning when they were talking last night.
Yeah, I think this is one of the best scenes. And it's funny because I was rereading the chapter, obviously, and that was a little section that I had already had underlined. Because there's such a beauty to it, and this is one of those Trinity moments, right? This is one of those moments where as Harry pours out his soul about what he's going to have to do, and there's that, like, disembodied moment where he has Ron and Hermione sitting next to him, and there's something about that that gives him hope, you know, and it brings him life. And it just shows the importance of friendship and community in life, and not just friendship and community, but deep friendship and community. And that's what he has with these two. And I think there is such a beauty in that. And it, you know, I think it helps us realize how much we all need that in our lives. And so I love that moment. And I love the moment when Harry reminds them tells them that their owl results are going to be coming and Hermione starts freaking out. And they get their results and they've all done great. Harry got great grades, and Ron got great grades. In fact, he got more owls than any of his brothers, his brother's Fred and George, that is, which makes him feel better. And of course, Hermione got amazing grades, all except for one where she got an E, which still means she exceeded in Defense Against the Dark Arts, but she did not get the full O, which is just devastating for her, of course.
Yeah, I can relate. I can relate to that.
It wasn't everybody. And I got good grades without trying, so it didn't bother me.
Well, but what's interesting here is not so much that Hermione is fixated on that. I mean, we have this moment where, you know, Ron gives her a little bit of sass about like, oh, that's still not good enough for you though, huh? But at the same time, it's actually Harry who's kind of more disappointed in himself and struggles a little bit more, even though his grades are pretty phenomenal. He's the one who struggles more with what's happening because he saw on there that there was not, like, that he did not get an outstanding in potions. And for, you know, Snape had told him that he only takes Newt students that's outstanding. And without potions, he can't be an Auror. And he kind of starts going through in his mind how, you know, even though it was a Death Eater who originally told him he'd make a great Auror, ever since then, he can't think of anything he would rather do. And to hear the fact that he doesn't get to do that now, he is having a hard time kind of celebrating.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting, and I loved the fact that Harry has that kind of conversation with himself. It's so weird that I had like a Death Eater tell me this, and yet it's always stuck with me. And it seemed to make even more sense with the fact that, you know, I have to take down Voldemort. And so what better way to do that than trying to become one of the most highly trained wizards there is? So, you know, we wrap the chapter up with that, and it, you know, it kind of creates this sense of, I guess, longing, that there seems to be something unresolved here for the character of Harry, which is going to be interesting to see if there's going to be a way. Will he be able to get in, you know, to potions or not? Or will this be the end of the desire for him to become an Auror? So we got chapter 6 coming up next week, Draco's Detour. But before we get there next week, Drea, where can everybody find you online?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me on Instagram, Letterboxd, Twitter, Vero under the name MattRushing02. I'm here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills every week, talking about something different in the Star Wars universe. It's a lot of fun. And with all the Star Wars hype we got going on, with stuff coming out like The Mandalorian and The Rise of Skywalker, definitely should be listening to Aggressive Negotiations. You can also check out the shows I do over on the Trek FM network. One is called The Orb, where I talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine when Chris Jones and I can record. You can also find me doing the 602 Club, which is our general geek show, where we talk about all the fandoms we love. And in fact, in a couple weeks, Drea Kaufman is going to be joining us so we can talk about Frozen and we can let it go and build snowmen. And then last but not least, you can find me doing Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney. And that is where we talk about films, but through the lens of faith. Thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.